Matthew 14:13 says, "Now when Jesus heard about John, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself. And the people heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities." See, John the Baptist was Jesus' relative. He was the man who baptized Jesus. He was the man who heralded the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And he was killed for his faith, for standing up for God's principles, for not backing down in the face of suffering or persecution. So what does it say that Jesus does at this point? Does he give up? Does he quit? Did he throw in the towel? No, it says that he withdrew, and that's natural. But there's a difference between seeking shelter, seeking peace in a time of mourning or a time of healing. There's a difference between that and shrinking back and giving up. So far in this series, we've talked about many different avenues of Jesus and different angles of how he is better. The Hebrews writer stresses that Jesus was fully human, and that he shared in our humanity so that he could be a better high priest, so that he could understand what following God felt like in a fallen world. Did the death of John affect Jesus? Absolutely. He was fully human. Did it change Jesus' direction? Absolutely not. Jesus continued in faith. He continued in obedience. See, after Jesus tries to get away, he tries to get some alone time, he tries to get some recovery time after receiving this news, it impacted him so much emotionally that he needed some time to get away and spend with his Father. But after this, we see a couple of Jesus' most impressive miracles. Jesus tries to get away from the people, but we're told that they follow him. And so he sees a large crowd, and so he has compassion for them, and he teaches them. And then he fed them when it was getting late. He fed over 5,000 of them. This was the setting for the famous feeding of the 5,000. Then Jesus sent the disciples across the lake on the boat, and then he sent the people away, the crowds of people away, and then he finally got the alone time that he was looking for. He got up on a mountain, and he prayed to God and spent some time there. And when he was done with his alone time, the boat was already a good distance out at the lake. And apparently it was struggling. The waters were rough that night. And so in the middle of the night, somewhere between the 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., I imagine it kind of took place like this. I imagine the disciple that was on watch that night, or that hour of the night, he would have been a little extra attentive because we're told the waters were rough. And so he would have been a little wide-eyed anyway, kind of watching to make sure that they were safe, making sure the boat stayed on course while the rest of the disciples were probably sleeping. And I can just see him looking and gazing and making sure things are on course, and then all of a sudden just turning white. And eyes popping open, and jaw dropping, and then just tapping gently the closest disciple body near him. Whoever, not even noticing who it was, just tapping gently, and then tapping not so gently. And I imagine that disciple waking up, Nathaniel, what's going on? What are you doing? It's not my time to watch. I could just see, just pointing. No words, just pointing. I could see him waking up and turning white, eyes pop open, jaw drops, and I can see him doing the same thing to the next disciple, just a little tap, a big tap, and I see this happening like dominoes across the boat until all 12 disciples were wide-eyed and white with fear. "It's a ghost," they cried out. But Jesus immediately set their hearts at ease. He said, "Don't be afraid, it is I." Peter then says, "If it's really you, Lord, then tell me to come out on the water with you." And Jesus said, "Come." And so Peter starts walking on the water. He had the faith enough to walk on water toward Jesus. A lot of us are familiar with this story because we know what happens next. He looked at the rough waters and he lost sight of Jesus. He was filled with fear again, but this time not from a ghostly image. He was filled with fear from the rough waters, from the dose of reality that he was walking on the water. He saw his surroundings and he began to sink. And he said, Lord, save me. And Jesus reached out his hand, you of little faith, why did you what? Doubt. Why did you doubt? When they got back in the boat, we're told that the waters stilled, the wind calmed, and they worshiped Jesus. You know, oftentimes we study these stories separately because there's so much in each story to break them down and dissect them and pull out all sorts of things that sometimes we don't get a bird's eye view on what of the whole scene of what happened. I mean, John is beheaded. He is killed for his faith. Jesus receives news and wants to get away, but 5,000 people or more follow him. He feeds them, sends them away, and then he goes walking out to the disciples on the water. Peter walks out to him, which was an excellent time for Jesus to display the difference between faith and doubt. The waters were rough. They were turbulent. I wonder how turbulent the waters had become or were about to become after the beheading of John. How turbulent were the waters that the disciples were anticipating as they were traveling across that lake and thinking, what happens now? John was killed. What happens to us? We're connected to Jesus. How rough did they expect the waters to get? And so what a message of encouragement from Jesus. Things are about to get rough. There are rough waters ahead. And when you're tired and you're weary, you need to find time to recharge. If an opportunity to minister takes place on your way there, then take a moment, minister, but still go and find some time to recharge. But whatever you do, do not lose your faith. Do not shrink back, no matter how turbulent the waters get. Let's write this down. I will suffer. I will endure. I will be confident. I will be richly rewarded. As you're writing that down, say that with me. Say, or repeat after me. I will suffer. I will endure. I will be confident. I will be richly rewarded. See, after Jesus' resurrection and his ascension into heaven, after the church began to grow and spread some 20 to 40 years, the church expanded through Pisidia and through Pamphylia and Mysia and even into Macedonia, all the way over reaching into Rome. And Christians were regularly exposed to persecution and suffering for their faith. And the Hebrews writer writes, but remember the former days when after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. You were showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. There's that word better again. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great what? Is it up there? No, it's not. Therefore, we're a few behind. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great what? Reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. See, a lot of us don't connect to this level of suffering because this is like a level 8 or 9 suffering on the suffering scale. In America, we might experience persecution for our faith on like a level 1 or 2, not an 8 or a 9. We're not being asked to give our life for the gospel. We're not being beheaded or having our close friends in church being crucified upside down. But it's still relatable. Because if some in our culture are throwing away their faith when they face a level one, level two, maybe even level three side of persecution, of discomfort for being a Christian, then does it really matter if we've made it to level eight or nine? I mean, if we're still losing confidence at a low level, this still communicates to us. This same encouragement still reaches out to us that do not lose faith. Do not lose the confidence you have. Don't throw it away. Suffering will happen. You will suffer. No matter what level it is for you. I've learned that pain is relative. I mean, objectively looking at pain, you can say, well, there's different levels of pain. And you can definitely categorize that there's a difference between people being beheaded for their faith and Christians who feel ostracized at work simply because they didn't laugh at a dirty joke. There is a difference between those levels of pain when we look at it objectively. But subjectively, pain is pain, isn't it? It hurts. Pain hurts. Suffering is suffering. I've gotten paper cuts, and I've torn ligaments. And I tell you what, they both hurt. If they both happened at the same time, I'd be able to say, yes, this pain is much greater than this pain. When I tore ligaments, that hurt a lot. But even so, when I get a paper cut, I still wince, and I still go, that hurts. Because pain hurts, suffering. We will suffer, and it will be to different degrees. Just because we're not suffering at that level doesn't mean that we can't receive the same encouragement in the suffering that we receive. You will suffer because of your faith. That is inevitable. We must endure. We must hold on with confidence. Don't look down at the rough waters and sink. Hold on to your faith no matter what. Because there's a reward waiting. There's a reward waiting for all of us. There is a consequence for staying faithful, for hanging on. Say that again. I will suffer. I will endure. I will be confident. I will be richly rewarded. I will live by faith. And write that down. I will live by faith. I'm going to read this next verse. We won't have it up on the screen, so you have a chance to write that down. Verse 38 of chapter 10 says, "But my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but those who have faith to the preserving of the soul." And that's right there in your bulletin. I wanted you guys to be able to take that underneath this. I will live by faith. We are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who live, or those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. We will live by faith. We will not shrink back. And then the Hebrews writer turns the page to chapter 11 and he defines faith. He says, this is what faith is. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. And this also is in your bulletin. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. And then from there, the author launches into a huge list of examples of men and women who have lived by faith. And it's often called the Hall of Faith. If you've heard that reference before, and that's chapter 11. And chapter 11 is a beautiful chapter. And I really wanted to read chapter 11. I was going to go through and read the entirety of chapter 11. But in our desire to move things forward, and with the March 12th coming up, we're wanting to make the services an hour. So I'm having to figure out where I can cut things. So I'm practicing. And so I need to get from about a 35 to 40 minute average to about half of that to get an hour. So please go and read Hebrews 11. If you're listening to this online, if someone's listening to this online and they catch this, I want you to just pause it, read Hebrews 11. Then unpause it as we step into Hebrews chapter 12. After this amazing list of followers of God, the Hebrews writer says, "Therefore, since we have Since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who, for this joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So say this with me: I will run the race with perseverance. And let's write that down. I will run the race with perseverance. And from these three verses that I just read, I am inspired and encouraged by the faith of others. So you can want to write that down. We are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. This list of men and women that who did amazing things by faith in chapter 11. We've had all of these go before us and give us an example to be encouraged, to be inspired by the lives of others. Not just those in the Bible, but those around us who are living by faith. We are inspired and encouraged by the faith of others. I actively and consciously lose things that would cause me to lose. Let's write that down. I actively and consciously lose things that would cause me to lose. The Hebrews writer says to lay aside, to throw away, to lose the things that would hinder your faith, to throw away any sin that would keep us from running the race with perseverance, to lose the things that would cause me to lose. You know why long-distance runners are so skinny? Well, some of you are thinking, well, duh, because they run all the time. That does have something to do with it, but really a lot of that is because of their diet and the way that they view food. They view food differently than normal people view food. You know, that when they see a cookie, they think about that cookie differently than I would think about that cookie. I see a cookie and I think, you want to see me do a magic trick? I can make that cookie disappear. I can make that whole plate of cookies disappear. Now, a runner looks at a cookie and they're not thinking, oh, that's going to be bad for me. Really, their top thought is, I'm going to have to carry that cookie every step of every stride the next time I run. So I don't want it because I know what it's going to cost to carry it. That's how runners think about extra food, food that they don't need, food that's not going to be healthy for them, because it's going to be something extra they're going to have to carry with them, and anything less they have. I mean, you strip race cars down so that they're light, so that the engine can move them faster. That's the goal. That's why you don't see a passenger seat in there or a back seat. There's just and a bunch of metal to protect them, but they shave off as much as they can. Swimmers. Most swimmers, male swimmers, the serious ones, they will shave their body. They will shave their legs. They will shave their chest. They will shave their back if they need it. They'll shave their head. They'll do anything they can that would get rid of anything they can that would hinder their time in the water from getting from one end of the pool to the other end of the pool. They shave it off. How much more important is the race that we are in? Many of us are carrying around a lot of extra weight and baggage in our spiritual race, and you need to just throw it aside. You need to just throw it off. You need to get rid of it. Anything that would hinder, any sin that so easily entangles us, we need to lose the things that would cause us to lose the race. And last, let's read, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. He has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I'm rereading this for you just in case you're like, wait a minute, deja vu. Didn't we just read this? For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself so that you will not grow weary and lose hearts. Write this down. I will guard against growing weary and losing hearts by fixing my eyes on Jesus. The author tells us to fix our eyes on Jesus so that we will not grow weary and lose hearts. And I'm immediately reminded of Peter walking on the water, exemplifying for all of us the success of walking by faith. My righteous will walk by faith in the scripture we read earlier. But he only walked on water when he had his eyes fixed on Jesus. The author of Hebrews says, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. When he looked away, his faith grew weary. When his eyes dropped, so did his heart and his faith. And instantly he began to sink. Don't lose heart. If you don't want your heart to drop, don't drop your eyes. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Keep your heart up. Keep your eyes up and keep your eyes on Jesus. I will suffer. I will endure. I will be confident. I will be richly rewarded. I will live by faith. I will run the race with perseverance. I will be inspired and encouraged by the faith of others. I will lose things that would cause me to lose the race. And I will fix my eyes on Jesus.